it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Yes, sir. It's hour number three of the G-Bag Nation here on 105 Through the Fan Live. Cold beers and cheeseburgers in Euless. Please do join us. It's a great place to watch football, get something delicious to eat and drink. They're celebrating their one-year anniversary here in Euless. Daily specials and lunch specials Monday through Friday. October's beer of the month is the New Belgium Voodoo Ranger. $4 for a 16-ounce cold beer, $6 for 22-ounce. And the happiest happy hour in Texas every day 3 to 6. So we are now in the midst of cold beers and cheeseburgers happy hour, delivering food and drink specials rivaling any in Texas. And they are the official DFW ASU alumni watch party. This is where we found these guys out in Arizona. They're in Arizona State. A hub for you there if you're a fan of that program, you want to come watch them. All righty. Let me tell you, tomorrow there's two spots, actually three, my bad, to pick up a 2025 G-Bag Nation flag. They're so hot, modeled after the state flag of Texas. Mansfield Hurtado 10 to 10:30, Fort Worth Hurtado 11:30 to 12, then the Highland Hotel for our Red River watch party from 2 to 6. And it's going to be a time, so we'd love it if you can join us. As Carter Freeman joins us now, host of Fan University, and I believe he's heading up to UNT. Of course, he's an OU guy. He'll be all over the game tomorrow as well. Carter, how the heck are you?
Doing great, guys. I wish I was heading up to cold beers and cheeseburgers, have one of those burgers you're talking about. They sound great, but instead we're fighting traffic to go watch one of the biggest Group of Five games of the year.
Yeah, can't wait to get your thoughts on that. And, of course, you'll have Fan University tomorrow. Is that 9 to noon?
Yep, 9 to noon. We'll have Dave Revson of the Big Ten Network. We got a big, you know, Oregon-Indiana Big Ten matchup tomorrow. We'll talk with Eddie Radosovich from Sooner Scoop to preview OU Texas and get you covered with all the big games 9 to noon tomorrow.
You're all over the entire college football nation. I love the show. But, I mean, I know the Sooners are so near and dear to your heart. I consider you the number one source for this question. Is Mateer going to play?
Ever since he got hurt and I saw it was his thumb and I saw the injury timeline, I just thought he was going to play because the way that kid plays on the field and the fact that in that Auburn game where he got hurt, he completed 16 of 17 passes after the injury or something crazy like that. So as long as it wasn't a fear of re-injury, I thought he was going to play. And last night on the SEC availability reports that the conference puts out now, he was listed as probable. So I think 100% you're going to see him in some capacity tomorrow. He's going to warm up. He's going to test the thumb. He's going to see if the grip is there. But I just think the way that kid has played at Wazoo and at OU for the couple games he's been there, if he can be out there, he will be out there.
You know, I grew up in rural Washington State. A lot of my Cougars friends are so mad about the portal and losing Mateer and everything. But that's the price you pay being in college football these days. So I would gather from your answer, though, you think Mateer is going to play well if he does.
I do. I think that he's just the kind of player that, and that's all injury, you know, it's all up to this injury, right? This thumb, we don't know exactly how he's going to react to post-surgery because the way he played with the injury was before he had the operation. But I do think if he goes out there, I would expect nothing but, you know, 100% from him because that's just the kind of player he is. And I know you mentioned those Washington State fans. Like, it is disappointing that he doesn't get to build a legacy there, but he's from Little Elm, Texas. I mean, he's a local product, and he grew up watching this game. I believe I watched an interview with him. He said he only went once, you know, maybe a decade ago. So I think it would mean a lot to him to go out there. And if he's going to go out there, I do think he'll play well.
Hey, Carter, I know here in our backyard, we're focusing on the Texas OU game, but I'm also got my eye on Oregon and Indiana. And why do I think Oregon is a better big game team than what Indiana is?
Because you saw Indiana last year have two opportunities in a top 10 matchup that they were a part of. They lost both of them. And they've only played in four top 10 matchups in their school's history. Two of them were last year. They lose both of them. Dan Lanning is Oregon's head coach, has already played in 8 top 10 matchups with Oregon, and he's split them. He's 4-4. But still, Lanning and Oregon have the experience in these high-stakes games, including 2 weeks ago in their game against Penn State, right? And they go into Happy Valley and get a win. And we can talk about how Penn State isn't as good as we all thought they were. Just forget that I picked them to win the national title this year, but it's still a big win for Oregon. So it just seems like they understand how to play in these games and win them. I love Indiana. I love Kurt Cignetti. And if they're going to go into Eugene and get a win, they got to get off to a fast start. I think that's going to be the only way they'll be able to keep up with Oregon.
I don't think I'm capable of making an objective Oregon opinion because so much has changed since I covered them, and I covered them for like 10 years in the Pac-10. I guess I guess things are different out there in the Big Ten and the recruiting is open, but I've always just thought that when it comes down to it, they will not have enough strength and power and playmaking in the trenches to really go on a championship run, especially now in the playoffs where you have to win multiples. Am I wrong on that assertion of the Oregon Ducks, Carter Freeman?
No, you saw it last year when they played Ohio State, and Oregon was the number one seed in the country last year, and they get absolutely mollywopped, one of my favorite words to use, when they played Ohio State in the playoff. It wasn't even close, and that was a team that Oregon had beat in the regular season. So I think until they show they can win all those games in a row, people talk about Oregon like they're a blue blood, but they don't have a national championship. And if you really, you know, Dawson, you mentioned when you covered them, they weren't what they are now. Like, it's really been over the last 25 years that they've really become a national power. So time will tell, but this Oregon team is incredibly well-built. They've already gone cross-country to Penn State and beaten them, and Penn State is still a talented team, no matter how underachieving they may be. So we'll see once push comes to shove in the playoff time frame, but Oregon in the Big Ten now is, I think, far and away. Ohio State is obviously still out there. They are the number one team, so I can't dismiss them, but they are an absolute contender, and I think it starts with watching Dante Moore, their quarterback, be the one to guide them through some of these, you know, early season transitions that they had from last year with Dylan Gabriel at quarterback.
Hey, Carter. Okay, got my eye also on a trip to Columbia, Missouri for the Tide. Everybody kind of talking about how they were ready to move on from that coach. They seem to have turned it around. Has Ty Simpson been that guy, or is there other things we need to know about Alabama?
Both can be true. I do think Ty Simpson has been that guy. He's played the best quarterback. He's been the best quarterback in the country pretty much ever since they lost to Florida State in their opening game, which looks like it's just such an inexplicable loss now that we're 5, 6, 7 weeks into the season that Alabama laid the egg that they did. But in that Florida State game, Alabama didn't have Jam Miller, their top running back. So they've gotten him back. They've gotten their running game up and moving a lot better than it was early in the year. And Alabama's got Ryan Williams at receiver, but they also got Jeremy Bernard, and Horton is another great receiver they have. They have a lot of weapons that they've been able to spread the ball around and kind of resemble a bit of those Bama offenses in the kind of the tail end of Nick Saban's time there. But this is so interesting because Missouri has played nobody, but they've absolutely destroyed everybody they played, and they've got the best rushing attack in the SEC with Ahmad Hardy. He's probably the most underrated player in the country at the running back position, because he plays at Missouri, and even though they're 14th, I think, is what they are this week, he's not getting a lot of talk. But Mizzou is awesome at running the ball, and that's something that Bama has struggled with sometime early in the season. But also, Bama did just go up against Vanderbilt, who had the second-best rushing attack in the country, and outside of one long run, they were able to shut Vanderbilt down. So that's going to key how that game ends up, and it's a huge test for Mizzou to say, yeah, we're real and we belong.
Carter, should I worry about Ohio State with a trip to Champaign?
No. And until Ohio State gives up, you know, through 5 games, Ohio State's allowing literally 5 points a game. That's how many points they're giving up a game. That's how good their defense is. It was great to end last year, has gotten even better this year. And they've played a Texas. They've played a Washington, right? Like, they haven't just played 4 FCS teams. They've played teams with legit talent, and they've managed to shut them down. And we can talk about Texas and their offense all you want, but still, holding them scoreless for 58 minutes says a lot to me. So I don't think there's much worry. This is for Illinois, it's like I was a believer going into the season, but then the Indiana game just took me off that, given how big they lost. And this is in Champaign, so that should help them a little bit. But Ohio State's not USC. They don't have the long cross-country travel that they have to do with the early kick. This is something Ohio State's used to. And Ohio State doesn't lose to anybody but Michigan, right? So in the Big Ten especially. So I don't think this should be any worry for Buckeyes fans personally.
How about things in College Station, though? Did Florida get things turned around, or are they just going to take a beating from the Aggies?
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
This seems like a classic, you know, team gets a big win over a top 10 team, and then they kind of turn back into what they were the week before, where I know that Florida has Dallas Wilson, their young receiver. He torched Texas last week, but that was also without Malik Muhammad for Texas. They were down in their secondary a little bit. And A&M, they're getting Scooby Williams back, their linebacker, and who's been a key cog for them for the last 2 years. And so many of the A&M players have been with Elko for more than, you know, his full time there. It's not like it's a full team of mercenary defensive players like other teams we've seen. Mm-hmm. So that fact, they're just so cohesive on defense, and the way they absolutely shut down Mississippi State last weekend, I think they're kind of going to do the same thing to Florida. And I just don't – I think that was a great win for Florida. I think it'll get Billy Napier a couple more games, but this is going to be kind of a back-to-earth thing for them, because I really am a believer in A&M this year. I think top to bottom with Marcel Reed and the receivers they got in the portal, plus Moss, their running back, is an excellent guy in the backfield, plus how good the defenses looked. Like, this is the A&M that I think fans thought they'd get under Jimbo. They just had to wait a couple years for Elko to come in and turn it into that.
It's Carter Freeman here with you. Fan University tomorrow, 9 to noon. Do Sooners fans fear Arch either now or in the future?
I think in general, yes, they do, because we always, and I know you guys have even mentioned this on the show before, and I know KNC were talking about it, how you can have a top 10 OU team playing an unranked Texas team, and all of a sudden the Texas quarterback who's been poor the entire year looks like Vince Young for one game. And so there's always that fear in the back of my mind personally, because this game, as an OU fan, it always takes 10 years off my life watching it, because I get so stressed because of the just things seem to even up. And with Arch, he's not played well in his two road games that he's played in, but he has played in them. So the more of those that he gets under his belt, the more comfortable he'll look in them. So I think in terms of that, yes, there is fear that Arch can live up to the five-star talent, the name that he had and people expected him to be this year, but his offensive line's not going to do him any favors. And that's something you don't really fix in a week with how poor they looked against Florida, especially the left tackle and left guard. That's something you don't fix quickly. And with OU, they've got a premier edge rusher in R. Mason Thomas. They've got a solid guy on the other side in Marvin Jones, who transferred from Florida State. And OU has four SEC-tier defensive tackles that they can rotate in and out. So up the middle, which is with the rushing attack for Texas, has been poor. You don't really get any rest from it. So that, I think, if you have fears with Arch, I think that's fair. Everything else about their offense is, I think, going to balance that out tomorrow.
Did they overestimate how they could develop internally offensive linemen? And, you know, do you make sure to correct this? You go back and hit the portal if you have young guys. Like, I know you want to bring them in and give them a plan and have them work, and they can look forward to starting, but that seems to be the critical error that was made in the team building of this Longhorns outfit.
Yeah, they had four guys leave from last year's team, which was last year's offensive line, which was an excellent line, starting with Kelvin Banks there on the left side, and that's been the biggest thing they've had struggles to replace. The thing with the portal is, you know, OU's kind of done that, where they've gone into the portal and gotten a couple guys who they've plugged and played, but offensive line and having depth there is maybe one of the hardest things to do in college football, And that's, I think, what separates the great teams from just the merely the good ones, is having that depth. And OU's already lost some players on their line, and they've had to rely on some of those guys. So, in to that point, their rushing attack, OU's that is, has not been great this year. Neither of these teams are terribly good at running the ball. So it's just tough because Kyle Flood, the offensive line coach for Texas, has been revered, and you've seen the fruits of his labor. And you want to keep these guys no matter their struggles now because of the track record. And back to OU, they've had a similar thing with Bill Biedenbaugh. He's been there forever, and he's constantly churned out offensive linemen that, you know, are first, second, third round picks. So it's a delicate balance, but it's absolutely the you know, bane of their existence right now. And Arch holds on to the ball too long. I think that's another thing that we could talk about with his development, is he needs to learn to get rid of the ball quicker. And that could be on his receivers, but I think a lot of that's also on him. It looks a lot like Jackson Arnold with OU last year.
Hey, Carter, did we find a weakness with Texas Tech's offense? Red zone trips, and they've been bad in the red zone, it seems like, a little bit this year. I think they're ranked like 103rd on red zone trips. Had some trouble against Houston last week, 2 of 8. Is this the only thing that's keeping Tech from being maybe a top five offense?
They did kick a lot of field goals in that game, to your point. They did stall out a lot. But the good thing for Tech is they were constantly in the red zone. So they had a lot of chances to correct that. And so far it hasn't mattered because they're usually up by 30, 40 points by the, you know, and so they're not really having to worry about their red zone issues. But until a team really in the Big 12 shows that they can compete with Tech and go toe-to-toe with them, which they played two road games against two undefeated Big 12 teams in Utah and Houston, and they just pretty much dominated both of them. So, yes, that could be a concern at some point, but that's not something I'm terribly worried about until a team shows that they can actually compete with Texas, or Texas Tech, that is, because just looking at the rest of the Big 12, no one looks even close to them on, even with the offensive struggles, on offense and especially on defense.
Thank you, Carter. Great work. Best of luck to you. Enjoy Denton tonight, and I guess we'll see you on Monday.
Yeah, so listen to Fan University 9 to noon tomorrow, and I got 50 minutes left on this drive, so wish me luck.
Enjoy. There he goes, Carter Freeman, on his way to Denton to watch UNT tonight. It's a huge football weekend, and we're talking a lot of Cowboys, a lot of Red River with you. Of course, tomorrow, Highland Hotel in Dallas. We'll have G-Bag Nation flags and a heck of a watch party, pool party. We're live at Cold Beers and Cheeseburgers in Euless. If you're getting out of work and you're anywhere near, you should check this out. They got so many TVs. There's got to be 100 TVs in here and 80 beers on tap. And the best place to watch sports in Euless definitely is right here at Cold Beers and Cheeseburgers. What are we doing next, Lucius?
I got some 420 news you could use because the segment is at 420. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's featuring a DFW hooper, a local hooper that is facing the death penalty in Indonesia.
Ooh.
Oh, no.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.